Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Zelman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. It's a pleasure having you join me today because we are initiating getting in early for the month of October, which I call Breast Health Awareness Month. So all of this month, I will be interviewing experts who will give us strategies and knowledge and wisdom so we can optimize our breast health awareness. And that's the power. That's the power. So for those who are joining me today for the very first time, I want to personally welcome you to my show. I hope you'll join me every week at this time. And if you can't make it to listen to it live, then please go to my website, which is What Women Must Know, opt in there, because I send my shows out to you every week, and that lets you listen to them whenever you want. And there's also other great information I send out on a regular basis. And then you can hop over to my Facebook page, which is also conveniently What Women Must Know, and I post my shows there, as well as posting on a pretty daily basis, great information, because it's all about empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. So I'm going to share with you a very dear friend of mine who we're kicking off this Breast Health Awareness Month with some great information. We're going to be talking about how to biohack for breast cancer prevention with Dr. Hillary Smith. And I just want to say, for people who do not know what that term biohacking is, which happens to be a really popular term being used these days, so I've kind of incorporated in the show, but biohacking is just talking about practical strategies to make a difference. And that's what this show is going to be about, practical strategies and answering a lot of the questions you may have in your mind about, you know, just how do you take the necessary steps to keep yourself healthy. And let me just share a little bit about my special friend here, Dr. Hillary Smith. So Dr. Hillary has practiced in the natural medicine field for over 3 decades. She earned her Doctor of Chiropractic degree in 1984 and has been in continuous practice in the LA area since 1985. In addition to practicing chiropractic, she has studied functional medicine, classical homeopathy, bioenergetics, and mind-body therapies. In 2006, she incorporated breast and full-body thermography into her practice after searching for answers to her own health concerns. Hillary is one of the few certified clinical thermographers holding the highest certification through the American College of Clinical Thermology. And in 2013, she changed to focus her practice to specialize in thermography for helping her patients find solutions to their health concerns. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Dr. Hillary Smith to the show today. Hello, Dr. Hillary.
Hello, Dr. Zelman.
And I should let everyone know, that because I did introduce you as my very special friend. You are my very special friend. We have been friends, gosh, Hillary, longer than I can even remember when we first met, which was in
LA.
Well,
I do remember, because it was when we first started doing thermography, so it was 2006, and you were our special speaker at an event that we held.
Well, it was a fateful day, wasn't it?
Yes. One more benefit of thermography, you never know who you'll meet.
You know, and it's true, because you've been such a great friend and also a teacher and mentor and so many things. So I really value the friendship, and it's a pleasure to have you back on the show. You've been on the show before, but I thought it was really time to get you back to update everyone with what you've been learning and to just bring in some of the important knowledge necessary to help guide women. And it's, you know, what we're talking about is not just for women, I want to say to everyone listening out there, but because the focus is on this Breast Health Awareness Month, we're going to give some specific strategies that women need to know about. So I think we should just jump into things. And because you have such knowledge and the highest certification of clinical thermography. Let's start there. So I'm going to ask you to define what thermography is and why it's a player in diagnostic tools or screening tools for breast health.
Great, thank you. So thermography is actually an infrared camera. The camera that we use has a very narrow range and a great sensitivity. And that's all it is. It's a simple test. It's not very complicated. We take pictures of the body. The infrared camera picks up heat patterns that come off the body, and these can be interpreted based on temperatures from pixel to pixel. So being a test of physiology, thermography is looking at activity or function in the body, which is different from other tests that we're used to having, which are looking at anatomy, like an ultrasound or a mammogram or a breast MRI. They're all looking at the structure. Thermography is looking at something completely different. So just to clarify, thermography is a screening tool. It's not a diagnostic tool, whereas let's say an MRI and a subsequent biopsy would be diagnostic. We're doing a preliminary screening. And I think that this is very important for women and men to understand because we do full body scans as well. Thermography has gotten so much more interest in the recent years, not when I first started, which nobody had any idea what it was. And people learn a lot about thermography from webinars or on different Facebook pages, and they think that if they have a lump that they'll have a thermography and that would be a better test. But what I would like to put out there is that thermography is a preventative screening where you establish a thermal fingerprint or a baseline for yourself and you look at change over time. So this is part of our preventative health care. It's a health assessment tool. So I want to encourage people to get interested in thermography before they have an emergency. So when someone has a lump and they think, well, I'm going to have a thermography because it's better than a mammogram, no, it's completely different. But we can't visualize that lump. So people that have a lump, I always want them to have some kind of test of anatomy at that time. A lot of our people choose to do an ultrasound, but that's a whole other discussion, I guess. Where I would like to see people get started with thermography is around 30, where we can start to look at change over time. And if the person drifts from their stability or their thermal fingerprint, they can look at why. Because things don't just happen overnight, usually. There's a building period where we don't have a diagnosis yet. And that's where we want to inform people that they could be moving in the wrong direction. And that's when they look at their hormones or their diet or their exercise or their mental state or whatever it might be and make a correction. So that's my job, helping people stay well.
Well, I just want everyone to know that you're my thermographer. And that is how I do my breast screening and have done for years and years. So I do not do mammograms. I work with breast thermography, and it's probably time to get another one, speaking of that, Hillary. So, but, you know, the thing
is... It is an annual screening.
I know. But the thing I wanted to emphasize is that it, you know, thermography is looking at a dynamic process that's going on within the body, and the reason why I really like it, as you were saying, it's like it's a way to observe what is happening that can be seen through a camera. For instance, if you are showing a lot of heat patterns, which is
or any change in your temperature, because someone could start out with a very cold thermal fingerprint and then go to what would be considered neutral, but for them it's a shift. So we
right.
don't want to get hung up on hot spots or red, which is a
so
hotter color. Yeah.
So that's really important because you know, working with breast screening, it's like you do your annual you know, exam, you go to the doctor, you run the blood test. This is something that we should be doing, right? It's like an annual assessment, and then you have markers, you have history to see what is occurring. And the reason why this is important is because the medical model is encouraging women to get mammograms at earlier and earlier ages, right? Correct? So women in their 40s now are being encouraged to have
mammograms.
Well, I
think it's confusing because it was always 40, and then the NIH did the study and they said 50, but there was a lot of pushback. So I'm not, I think women are very confused. I just actually saw an ad for a study that's being conducted at some major hospitals with a automated breast ultrasound for women with dense breasts, because mammography is known to not be an effective tool for women with dense breasts, and they're actually doing a study in some hospitals to look at adding that. So that would be a step forward, and I think that's going to be a significant test. I just had a woman who came into my office, and she was informed that she had dense breast tissue on the mammogram. Well, there are laws in many states, not all states now, it would be great if it was federal, that women that have dense breast tissue on mammography need to be advised that the efficacy of the mammogram is decreased and that they should be offered another screening. What this woman was offered was to come in every 6 months instead of every year for a mammogram and never offered an ultrasound. I don't want to talk too much about mammography because it's not my field, but it just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I want to talk a bit about it because I know you're being very politically correct, but the fact of the matter is when women get a mammography, they are exposed to radiation. And what horrifies me about the story you just told was that here you are every 6 months getting irradiated, and we know from studies that have been done that it's cumulative. So the very fact that you're getting regular mammograms, and especially this woman who already has dense breast tissue and is exposed to this radiation every 6 months, could be at increased risk for creating, guess what, breast cancer. And
the other point is if it's something that's not appropriate for you, why would you do it more? It just doesn't make sense.
And that's where women have to get educated, because it's not a benign process. It's not a benign tool. It has risks.
And the other thing that women also need to think about is that then when they're offered a 3D mammogram, I'm not saying not to do it, but to educate yourself, because 3D mammogram is a sexier term than a breast CT scan, but it does carry much more radiation. So people, women just need, like you said, to be informed, to make their own decisions. And when someone says a 3D mammogram, they don't say it's like a CAT scan, it has more radiation. So you need to be informed of what tests are being done.
Okay, so a couple of things before we drift too far off this topic.
Okay.
Because I think it's really important that, women listening are going to want to know some practical questions to ask and steps to take. But the reason why I get concerned about mammograms being offered to 40-year-old women or even younger, I wrote a book about 10 years ago now called What Women Need to Know, I don't even know the title of my book, What Women Need to Know to Protect Their Daughters from Breast Cancer. And in that, I actually interviewed 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds, in some cases a teenager who were diagnosed with breast cancer, which was horrifying me because I was going around meeting all these either young women or mothers of these young women who were being diagnosed with breast cancer, because the younger you're diagnosed with breast cancer, the more aggressive the cancer is, the more it tends to be estrogen negative. Receptor negative. I mean, and then the consequences of the traditional treatment are devastating to young women, their health and fertility. And that just got me so curious about what was going on, what was driving this trend, which is a trend now of younger and younger women being diagnosed with breast cancer. And we're going to talk about what I think is driving some of those conditions leading to this trend. But the younger a woman is who starts getting mammograms for breast screening as opposed to diagnosis, and I think that's a really important distinction. A diagnosis is when you detect something like a lump, but screening is preventative. It's monitoring your physiological changes and just keeping tabs on what's going on. But for younger women, that's more radiation over a lifetime. If you start getting mammograms when you're in your 40s, and they want you to get a mammogram, how often now, Hillary? Is it every 2 years, every year?
Again, I think that it's up in the air, and it depends on somebody's individual doctor. But I think it's pretty much they get the paper annually. And a lot of doctors aren't doing manual breast exams. So just before we move out of thermography, I'd just like to make a couple of points. When people have their physical, whether you're not having, people are now having a pap every 3 years, so they still, then they don't have a well woman exam. Women need to do their own breast exams. That's how most things are found. And ask your doctor, because you want an outside person to also do that exam on you. The other thing I wanted to say, because I've seen it a lot, people have a lump, they haven't had any breast testing, they go for a thermography, they may go to a thermographer who's using an inferior camera, who's not well educated, and if nothing comes up on that lump, the person has a false sense of security, because we don't know if the body had encapsulated that tumor, if it had been growing for 10 years, and that is the time that I'll always want someone to have an ultrasound. Let's just take one look at that anatomy, and we know what we're dealing with. Conversely, if someone has a mammogram and they see calcifications, they look benign, they don't know, then you put another tool in, thermography, where you're looking at activity and you see if any changes are occurring or if that's just something that is completely benign with no metabolic activity. So we can use more than one tool. Let's not get fixated on one thing or the other. And many of the people in our practice find ultrasound to be very complementary to look at their anatomy.
Okay, so to help give people some or women listening, or men, who are husbands and sons, and so it's everybody listening, let's provide some practical questions or steps that people can go to the doctors with. So either it's time for women to get their screening done, or they are being told they need to come in, maybe there's something suspicious. I mean, what are the steps? Where should women go? What are the questions should women ask? If they're just an annual screening, is it best to look for a qualified thermographer in their area? Or should they ask for an ultrasound? I find this a really confusing subject, so I want your advice and experience and guidance how women should approach this.
Well, I think it depends on somebody's age, their risk factor, if they've had a lump, what their past history is. I mean, every person is obviously unique, but I would say starting around 30, especially if you have a significant family history. But let's start earlier than 40, because, like you said, we're seeing so many young women developing really aggressive breast cancers. Find a good thermographer in your area. If people can email us, and we'll try to find them the best referral if they're interested in that, or have a trusted friend refer their thermographer. So we want to start doing thermography as a health screening to stay well, but you also want to look at things in more than one way. So definitely do a breast exam when you're in the shower. When you're soapy, it doesn't have to be a big drawn out thing. Just be familiar with your own body. And then once a year, if you have a physical or you see a midwife or a nurse practitioner, ask someone else who is well-versed in a clinical breast exam to feel your breasts. And then based on people's ability to secure other testing or their own comfort, what people can handle or not handle, than to do a test of anatomy. For myself, I do my thermography every year. I try to get a clinical exam. And every couple of years, I'll throw in an ultrasound to look at it in a different way. Because, Cheryl, nothing is perfect. And I'm talking breast MRIs with contrast, mammography, often ultrasound, thermography. There's nothing that is 100% perfect. So if we want to protect ourselves, let's be open-minded to looking at non-toxic ways of monitoring our health and not just get really dogmatic about one way or the other.
Which is a really sensible way to approach this. So I have another question.
Yes.
Can a woman ask for an ultrasound rather than mammography?
You know, I'm in California, and things are just a little more, it just seems they're tough here for people. So there are some ultrasound places where people can cash pay. Some people are very insistent to their doctors, and they're able to get it, and other people are in a system where an ultrasound is only a spot test following a mammogram. I have seen some industrious people setting up some breast ultrasounds in hotels, but I've also seen some bad results from that. I'm going a little off of the question that you sent me, but I feel that it's kind of heartbreaking that this is how the system has set it up. So even if women would want to self-pay, they can't go someplace credible where they're communicating with their own physicians to do a medical test that they choose, and that they're being sort of going in the shadows to a hotel room. I mean, that's a bad system, in my opinion. But I think you decide what you want, you educate yourself, and then you have to be your own advocate. And you can find it if you want it.
So I only ask that question because ultrasound is a safer screening tool than mammograms. You know,
and
if it's possible,
it can see through dense breast tissue.
Yeah, which is really important. That's a huge piece.
It may not see calcifications, so you have to decide if you want to go down that road, and I think we don't want to get too off topic.
Yeah.
Because we're
going to
talk about health strategies.
Right. But I do have a question. After a woman has a mammogram, which is exposure to radiation, do you make suggestions what she should do or could do to reduce the impact of that exposure?
That doesn't come up that much for us in our practice. There are some women that we work with will maybe have a MRI, and people have to understand what the breast MRI is now. They are doing the contrast dye, so you have to educate yourself, too, about that gadolinium, because
which
there
is
are
toxic.
People and can actually cross the blood-brain barrier. There's a famous actor that's got a big lawsuit right now. He's an action star. I can't think of his name right now. It'll come to me. But his wife was affected. And I've seen a lot of women that say it's not cleared out of the liver in 2 hours or whatever they're told. So I think when there is, I mean, people need to detoxify like you would if you had some other exposure, and I think you probably have some suggestions, but definitely like a lot of green drinks and chlorella-type products, cilantro, parsley, anything that you would do for a heavy metal detox I think could be appropriate at that time. And also we don't want anybody using deodorants with aluminum, but our friends from Detox Deodorant Herbalex had taught me this, that you don't want to use a traditional aluminum product prior for days, I would say weeks, I would say never, prior to having a mammogram, because you don't want to be putting metal on your body that's going to be reacting to the radiation.
Well, that's a really important point. Well, no one should be using an antiperspirant because that's incorporating aluminum if it's a commercial version. I mean, there are natural products that are natural deodorants, but you never want to ever want to use an antiperspirant because of all the toxic ingredients, including aluminum, that's in there. So that's a really.
But a lot of those still even have parabens and other chemicals, and the natural ones will absorb the wet after it comes out of your body and neutralize the odor, which you shouldn't have odor actually if you're not toxic or super hormonal. But the other ones suppress a natural act of detoxification, which is sweating. And the underarms are where the lymphatics for the breast, but also the head and neck and the thyroid and the neck drain. So why would you want to clog that up? It, again, it doesn't make sense. And people do it routinely. You know, a lot of people don't even sweat, and they just do it because it's a part of their morning ritual.
Well, I don't use any of that stuff. And,
me either.
And I know, and there are natural products out there, and that's another great point you just made for another biohacking point. You know, if you're going to use a deodorant, if you need a deodorant, first of all, look at what may be going on that's making you create the bacteria that has, you know, that odor, but find a natural organic option that are a lot of very effective ones out there.
And when you go to work out, don't wear deodorant. Let sweat it out. Go in a sauna, sweat it out. I mean, that's how your body gets rid of toxins, so don't suppress that.
So if people want to know who is a certified thermographer in their area, in their part of the country, or even part of the world, you said they can contact you. And
they can just email us, info@pictureinside.com, and we'll try to connect them with the best option for them in their area.
That's great. info@pictureinside.com.
Yes.
And therefore, your website, will just give a little plug for that right now, is pictureinside.com. And you have great information there. So if people want to learn a little bit more about thermography, if you've never heard about this screening tool, or just want to continue to educate yourself.
I know, or look at some pictures, infrared pictures, see what it
even
looks like.
Yeah, so go up to pictureinside.com, get educated. And before we leave this topic, I think it's important to mention how thermography can also be beneficial for other things.
Yes, we do a lot more full body scans, and I think internationally we're doing a lot more full body scans. First of all, people, it's a health assessment tool. Again, the first time we do it, we don't know if people are on the way up, on the way down, from whatever's going on with them. If something comes up highly suspicious, of course, we don't wait around. We ask the person to go further investigate it with other tests. But in the head and neck, the stuff that we're seeing, especially in old root canals and under crowns, that people have no idea are festering. And sometimes we see things before their dentist can find it, and then 5 years later the person says, oh, I ended up having an abscess there. But with more biological dentistry available, it's a great tool for people to monitor that. And then we can follow, did the oil pulling that they were doing to decrease bacteria, or the silver toothpaste that I know that you talk about, did that minimize some of the gum problem? We can follow that. We can see if help the person determine if their headaches are coming from muscle spasm or their TMJ or what's going on with that. We don't see the brain, but we're looking at skin temperature and how it reflects what's going on. Some lymphatic stuff in the neck, the thyroid, should you have it checked? Doesn't mean you don't have it checked annually anyway, or if you have symptoms, but it can help people to determine things. And then if people have pain, where is it coming from? Is that low back pain originating? Is the inflammation in your hip or your low back or your buttocks? So it's a really useful tool to help people streamline how they're going to bring other modalities in for their health.
And I think that's such an important point to make, that this is a tool that has many applications, and especially if people are...
And completely non-toxic, and it doesn't hurt, and there's no radiation, and we're not putting anything into your body.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And you can find out, if you're using it as a whole body scanning, you can see really where the origin of an issue may be. You may have pain somewhere, but it's radiating from somewhere else. So if you just keep focusing on where it's showing up, you're not really going to be healing the problem because you're not getting to the root cause. So, I found that really helpful. So, okay, anything else that we want to say about thermography before we move on to some other?
I think we're good. People can look at my website. They can email us. So I think we should move on because we're about to get bombarded with Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And I don't know about you, Cheryl, but I'm aware of breast cancer, and I think everybody is. I'm being sarcastic.
Well, we
don't need a football player in pink tights to say, hey, there's something, it's called breast cancer. Have you heard of it? So I think
And it's become so commercialized. There's pink everywhere on top of yogurt tins and Coca-Cola.
And things that have toxic ingredients that are known carcinogens. It's definitely,
Commercialized issue and month and campaign. And, many, many years ago, I wrote an article called Seeing Deception is Your Only Protection, to play on the words for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And it's still a really relevant article. I'll probably have to repost it.
The history of the pink ribbon and Estee Lauder, and it's an interesting story that people can investigate.
Yeah. Yeah, it's another way that we have been misinformed. The glamour, the glamour that's created. But anyway, we'll move on. So So the next biohack or strategy that I think is really important for people to know about, and probably is not particularly well known, if at all, is this physiological mechanism called estrogen metabolism. And
right.
do you want to talk a little bit about it? Because you've been looking into that, and just explain just simply what that means.
Well, I think the author of Hormone Heresy is the person that could go more in depth. But I would say, who's that? Dr. Selman. I think that women do not realize that. Well, first of all, women don't realize that bioidentical hormones are still hormones. Of course, if you're going to do it, it's a better choice than Premarin for a million reasons, but or 23 reasons, right? Premarin is horse urine. I think that's why it's called Marin, like mare, right? But people think if they're on bioidentical hormones, they're not on hormones. So I think that that's important for people to realize. I see very conscious women who are choosing to do thermography that come into my office doing things that they're so unaware of, like drinking out of plastic bottles. And then when I say something to them, that's number one. It's out. It's over. Forget about it. Get rid of it. And they say, but I don't leave it in my car. Well, the truck that transported it, they left it in their car, and before it got put in the store, it was out in the parking lot. So the plastics have already broken down. And the BPA-free, and I think it's coming out more and more now, is also not a safe plastic. So people need to be drinking out of glass or food-grade stainless steel when you're carrying your clean water around with you, because these are estrogen mimics, these plastics, that will increase, they will disrupt your hormonal systems. So people are getting hormones in so many ways through their food. So even if you think that your hormones aren't a problem, there's so many hormones around us, and we have to excrete them properly. And that's a big job for the liver also. So I'm sure you have some tips.
So let's start at the beginning. So when we talk about breast cancer, there's the most common form is called estrogen receptor positive. So it means that it's the hormone estrogen that plays a role in contributing to breast cancer. So people are, women are often concerned about estrogen, thinking estrogen is the driver for breast cancer. And there's a lot of misinformation about all of that. And the thing that I have been really fascinated by, or you know, addressing, is what is reducing exposure to these estrogen-like substances, which you were talking about with the plastics, for instance. And I have to say, it's not just plastic water bottles; it's in the receipts you get. This chemical, bisphenol A, that is a hormone mimic, an estrogen mimic, is found in the receipts that you get from every store that gives
but
you.
But not
receipts.
Our office. We have BPA-free paper.
Well, there
it
you
is
go.
Possible. Okay, go on.
Another small reason to move to LA. But anyway, it's in the dental sealants that children are getting. It's in the lining of tin cans. It's in, recently I found out, it used to be in contact lenses, I think. There's some plastic there. But anyway, these are ways that we are getting estrogen, which are considered obesogens as well, which means it's altering these hormonal pathways and leading to weight gain as well as hormonal imbalance. But here's the deal, that estrogen is not your enemy. If estrogen was the cause of breast cancer, all pregnant women would be getting breast cancer, because that's the time when we have some of the highest estrogen levels in our entire life, and that's not the case. So what's the story? And this is a story that I find really important, and it's a story that I have investigated because I have been doing genomic testing, which is looking at the inherited genes, gene expressions from mom and dad, and looking at the glitches, I call them the software glitches that we inherited, that impairs our body's ability to work optimally. So there's this process called estrogen, physiological process called estrogen metabolism. And basically it has to do with the liver, as you said, and it has to do with how capable the liver is in being able to deactivate estrogen into a benign, non-stimulating, non-DNA damaging form, and then be safely taken out of the body. So the issue is, if the liver is compromised in some way, not making the proper enzymes to initiate this process and the steps required, there is a place in that liver detoxification process where estrogen could be turned into a more dangerous form, that is a free radical that can, in the right presence of conditions, lead to DNA damage that could contribute to breast cancer. So it's all about how you support the liver and detoxification. And let me just say, in working with hundreds and hundreds of people with genomic testing, which I really recommend people do, which I'll give a link to.
I did your genomic testing, and it was really eye-opening for me.
It saved my life as well. So I will give a link to the genomic testing, and while we're talking about it, I'll give a discount for anyone who wants to do it for the month of October. I have found that I would say more than 95%, I'd say it's higher, people have inherited a compromised ability to break down and detoxify this in this estrogen metabolism pathway. So that may not be a problem if we were living maybe 100 years ago, where breast cancer was very rare, but it is a problem now because we live in a toxic world. And as you were saying, you know, these plastic things, all these synthetic things that have populated our world are outgassing or have turned into.
And the hormones that are given to factory farmed meat and chicken and things like that.
All these things have generated so many toxins and estrogenic mimics that our modern lifestyle has not matched what we've inherited, and the genome and our ability to detoxify to such an extent. So we have to support this pathway, this estrogen metabolism pathway. And I hope people kind of got a sense of that, because it's actually a very complicated process, but simple to really get the essence of. It's impaired. The liver is impaired in its ability to properly metabolize all these forms of estrogens into safe, metabolites that we are designed to then eliminate if things are working properly. So what's the biohack for that? I'll tell you my favorite biohack, and you may have a suggestion, Hillary, but I found that working with broccoli seed extract, a really good broccoli seed extract, and I have a really good one on my website called Broccomax that's been demonstrated to really work. The active ingredients in cruciferous vegetables like broccoli seed extracts have the ability to provide the liver with the right chemicals that can support proper estrogen metabolism, reducing the risk. And while I am talking about this, even though we're talking about breast health, this is a shocker for most people, but for men, for all the men listening, the prostate is an estrogen-sensitive organ responding to these estrogen signals, and if the more potent, super badass kind of estrogen is being created, then the prostate becomes vulnerable, and you can have enlarged prostates. So everyone should be taking a broccoli seed extract product to support proper liver metabolism and make the key molecule called sulforaphane. And that's what breaks down in the gut with the use of the food, broccoli seed extract. And by the way, sulforaphanes turn on all these protective genes, reduce inflammation, they help reduce free radical damage, and support optimal use of vitamin D. So that's my suggestion. And is there
And that's
anything?
A whole more of a whole food than doing a modification like DIM. So I think that's a great choice for people. Also, when you were talking about eliminating these estrogens, again, constipation is a problem. So having a regular bowel so that you can actually excrete these metabolites is also important. And one other thing for people to understand what you said about how these estrogen disruptors will create obesity, and then you have more estrogen being produced in the fat cells. So it is kind of a vicious cycle, isn't it?
It is a vicious cycle, and the more weight a person has, so the fatter you are, your fat is an active metabolic organ generating inflammation. And inflammation is the precursor for all chronic conditions, including cancers, including breast cancer. So,
yes.
And it makes a lot of estrogen. It's an estrogen factory. Fat is an estrogen factory. So we are under the impression that as we go into menopause, we reduce estrogen levels, which is true to an extent if you are not overweight or obese. In that case, you may be making more estrogen than a skinny perimenopausal or premenopausal woman. So these are things that we need to understand and appreciate, and then put the strategies in place to support proper detoxification and just optimizing our body's functioning. So do you want to let me just say there is a test called the estrogen metabolism test. Do you use that test in your practice, Hillary?
No, I've just started doing a little work with the Dutch test, which is a dried urine test. It's so in-depth, I'm still learning it, but I think that that's a very good test. I don't know the test that you're talking about.
Okay. Well, there is a test called the estrogen metabolism test. You cannot get it from your allopathic doctor. You need to
ask. Is it saliva or?
It's urine, I believe.
Okay.
And I haven't used it for a while, but I do recommend it for anyone who is concerned about breast cancer, who's had breast cancer, who's recovering from breast cancer, has breast cancer in their family, because it is a test that actually will show you how your liver is properly metabolizing estrogens. And if it's going down a dangerous... Okay, so I don't know that test, but this other one is called the estrogen metabolism test as well. So these tests show that if you're going down a pathway that is the more dangerous free radical form of estrogen, then that's an indication that you need to make changes. You need to make changes in your diet, in your environment, and, you know, get more broccoli seed extract, eat more cruciferous vegetables, which is the source of these sulforaphanes, like broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, kale, All of these should be a regular part of our diet because they contain these sulforaphanes. They turn your body, create sulforaphanes from the process, the digestive process when you have those foods. So,
and these can be steamed, especially because there's some question about these cruciferous vegetables and people with thyroid. They don't have to be eaten raw. You can lightly steam them, correct?
I always recommend people take cruciferous vegetables either in some form of cooked, you know, slightly steamed, stir-fried, right, whatever you want to do, or fermented, but not a big fan of doing raw. I don't even think raw broccoli or cauliflower tastes particularly good, and certainly not kale. It's like,
yeah.
No, I always ask them, please take the kale out of my juice. I don't want
Yes, I do too. I just don't want that raw kale. I
right.
think when we're talking about this, I think there's so many things that we could talk about. I know that we're short on time, but I want to just make people aware that there was just a big lawsuit settled for a groundskeeper for the cancer that he developed because of the Roundup, which is the glyphosates, which are a huge problem in our food supply, GMO foods, and now it's in vaccinations, it's everywhere. And this will really disrupt your system. So I know that you have some strategies for that, but again, you know, we're going to have biohacks for what's in our environment, but how do we look at our environment? So use clean products. We didn't even get into the estrogen disruptors that are in your everyday cosmetics and shampoos. Environmental Working Group, they have the website where you can look up your products. So that's a real good resource for people. Clean products. Clean your home with non-toxic cleaning supplies. They're so easy to find. They're so easy to make. So you want to keep your home as clean as you can, your body products and your food as clean as you can. And then you don't have to undo as much. We still have to undo what's out there that we can't control, but let's try to control what we can. I think that's really important.
And I'm glad you made that point because, look, just think organic. You should not put anything in your body, on your body, that is not organic. So cleaning products, personal care products, toothpaste, moisturizers, shampoos, you know, whatever you clean your house with, you know, deodorants, soaps, everything needs to be organic, which is the easiest way.
Lotions.
Everything. So you are not putting that extra burden on your liver. And
right.
and all the consequences when the liver cannot properly detoxify and eliminate these, break them down and eliminate them. They turn them into more dangerous free radicals. So let's move on because I want to touch on a few other subjects while we have the time. I think we need to mention the role of vitamin D because that is a really simple biohack people can do and measure and address and bring up to optimal levels. So.
And you ask your regular doctor to test your vitamin D levels, and then you ask for your labs, because when they tell you that you're normal, their lab range is usually 30, which for optimum health, you don't want it to be that. We want, I think, 60 to 80, right? And then people that have had cancer that are working with integrative oncologists are going 80 to 100. So normal, the regular normal is not optimum. So people need to look at their own labs. And then once you start treating yourself with vitamin D, do your labs again so you see how you metabolize it. When I did your genomic test, Cheryl, that's when I realized that I was not good at metabolizing vitamin D. So I need to take more every day just to keep my levels at a place that I think is a safe range for me.
And, okay, a couple of things I want to add to that. So vitamin D is really important because it's, first of all, it's a hormone. It has a lot of key roles to play in the body. First of all, it's anti-inflammatory. So it supports the immune system, reduces inflammation. But vitamin D is also a major switch that turns on all these other protective genes against cancer. And that's why it's so important to have optimal vitamin D levels, because it's probably one of the key factors that is a major risk factor for for all sorts of chronic illnesses, not just breast cancer, but autoimmune diseases and, you know, just cardiovascular disease, and everything is related to low vitamin D because of the many ways that vitamin D supports optimal health. And what you said is so critical. You need to have optimal levels. You have to have levels that are really going to be beneficial. And the only way you know is you have to get your blood tests done. And if you get an annual wellness exam, make sure they put the vitamin D in. You know, places like Australia, which has high, I mean, in Australia, people are terrified of the sun and have really low vitamin D levels, even though they get more sun in Australia than most other countries in the world. So you're covered up from head to foot, which is another show we'll do down the track. But the point I want to make is that in Australia, they're only, in the annual exams that people get, they're only checking vitamin D every 2 or 3 years. Because they go, well, everyone has low vitamin D, but what, isn't that insane thinking? I don't understand the logic. You need to test on a regular basis because your vitamin D levels will fluctuate depending on what's going on with your exposure to the sun, with your health, with how you're digesting, assimilating, how much light you're getting. So you need to know, because taking vitamin D is not ensuring that you are attaining optimal levels, which should be above 60. And I also want to say that it's the common way to get vitamin D is in a fat-soluble form, which is what most capsules are. But if people have digestive issues, they don't have the enzymes, they just, you know, have compromised gut health, they may not be able to actually break down, digest, and assimilate the vitamin D. So I always recommend people get a form of vitamin D called micellized D. Micellized, which is, it's made into small, the fat is made into small little droplets that can be absorbed more easily. So I recommend micellized D. And in addition to that, I like to use a micellized D and K formula, because K ensures that vitamin D and calcium that is part of the, how we want to say this, that you use vitamin D efficiently to get in, so the proper metabolic processes are going on.
And good
and
for
you
your
don't
bone
get calcifications.
Health.
And it's good exactly. for your bone health. And you don't get calcifications on other parts of the body, even the breasts, right? The breast calcifications could be because of impaired proper metabolism of vitamin D.
I'm still waiting for that answer. Is it all the fluoride? So if anybody has the answer to that, I would love to know. I ask all my gurus, and I haven't gotten a definitive answer. I know we're coming to the end, and I just have to say that you've done so many shows on EMFs, and it's so important, and I know that people love their you couldn't give me an iPhone. You couldn't give it to me. I mean, an iWatch. I have an iPhone. But I know you've done so many shows on EMFs, and I hope that everybody will listen to that, because I think that this is the new wave of a silent problem that is going to interfere with the health of our entire population, and it worries me greatly.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, and I have done many shows, and I will continue to do shows, because the term that...
And don't wear your phone on your body, and don't put it in your bra, and don't get a cute little bag. I just saw one, Cheryl. I won't send it to you because you'll fall over. A shawl, like a scarf, that you can wear with a pocket right over your breast where you can conveniently keep your phone.
Because if people haven't heard about the risks of breast cancer from the phone, but there are women now who are developing breast cancer, and their cancers, the little tumors, are actually the shape, the outline of the phone where they have put it in their bra.
So, and young women in their
20s. It's pretty terrifying to realize that as we, you know, just consume more of our devices, the thought that they are designing clothing, they're designing bras, and I ask young women Of all ages, actually. But
I stop them
women.
On the street. Tell them to take it out. They just don't know.
Good, good, good. You're a good hormone heretic. Because this is a really dangerous device. So we've talked about that. I've talked about solutions that are effective that I use that I think everyone should be using. I mean, you know, it's like every strategy you can put into place is going to reduce the risk. And you put more and more strategies in place, you are walking a path of greater health and wellness. So this is why we talk about these strategies and these issues. You know, we have to be proactive. There's a doctor I've been listening to a lot lately. His name is Dr. Jack Cruz, and he says something really profound I'm going to pass on in the last minute or so. He says the environment that you got sick in is the environment that you have to change. Now, you can't get well in the same environment that you got sick in. It doesn't mean you have to leave your home. That's a radical way. It means you have to start making changes in the environment that you live in, whether it's food, water, EMF protection, nutraceuticals, sleep patterns, whatever it is, has to change in order for you to heal from any disease. You can't continue to do what you've always done and get a different outcome. So I just so appreciate what we've been talking about, Hillary, with thermography, with supporting the estrogen metabolism through the broccoli seed extract, through eliminating all these chemical sources, talking about the role of vitamin D. We talked about a lot of stuff. So in the minute we have, is there anything you want to add before we have to wrap up the show today?
No, I think women just need to educate themselves. There's no magic bullet. There's no magic pill. Nobody is going to save you. It's not hard to do your best. And we never know what the future holds. So just be grateful for every day. Enjoy your health. And do what you can to perpetuate it. And have fun with it. It's not a heavy thing. It's a fun thing to be healthy.
So great advice.
Don't you think?
I agree. No, I agree. Yeah. I think, you know, gratitude and joy is a powerful healing pill to take. So people, go visit Hillary at pictureinside.com and info at pictureinside if you want her to refer you to someone in your area. And, practice some of these biohacks. They really make a difference. So thank you, Dr. Hillary Smith, for all your great wisdom and support and strategies that you've been sharing with us. It's always a pleasure to have you here on the show in my life. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And to all of you listening, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. And be healthy this month.
Be healthy. And always
don't
remember,
wear pink.
Don't wear pink, and always remember to honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.